everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. We have another really inspiring conversation for you. And that's what the show is all about. We are here to empower you with truthful information so you can make truly informed decisions in your life and to expand your horizons about what life is really all about. We're going to be talking about some of those deeper and meaningful moments in our life and how they are part of our keys to getting healthier, younger, and living a life that's more meaningful and certainly more passionate. Before we jump in, I want to remind everyone, especially my new listeners, that I have a great website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and that's a chance to get some more information. I have free reports. I always keep you up to date with what I'm up to, so you can go over there, opt into my newsletter, and then jump over and like me at the Facebook page, What Women Must Know, a place where I get to do a lot of sharing of great information that I'm finding and I'm sure you'll be interested in learning about as well. So What Women is the place to go. Oh, I've never had that little poet in me come out before. must be because of the guest that I have today. I have a wonderful guest that will be sharing his wisdom with us. We're going to be talking to Dr. Alan Hamilton about the spiritual lessons from a life with horses. Now, this is not just about horses, because Dr. Alan Hamilton, who started his working life as a janitor, has just transformed his life into something so meaningful. He would eventually go on to graduate from Harvard Medical School and complete his neurosurgical residency training at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Dr. Hamilton holds 4 professorships at the University of Arizona in neurosurgery, radiation, oncology, psychology, and electrical and computer engineering. He has been chosen by his neurosurgical peers as one of America's best doctors for the last 18 consecutive years and selected as one of the leading intellects of the 21st century. Dr. Hamilton has held positions as Chief of Neurosurgery, Chairman of the Department of Surgery at the University of Arizona. Dr. Hamilton now serves as Executive Director at the Arizona Simulation Technology and Education Center, a multidisciplinary think tank at the Arizona Health Sciences Center, devoted to developing new technologies and training procedures to reduce preventable medical adverse events. He has authored more than 20 medical textbook chapters, 50 peer-reviewed research articles, and has served on the editorial board of several medical journals. He is also a decorated Army officer who served in Operation Desert Storm. For the past several years, Dr. Hamilton has served as medical script consultant on more than 150 episodes of the hit TV series Grey's Anatomy and 4 seasons with Private Practice. He is listed with several speakers bureaus, is an elite speaker for Kennard's Enrichment Program, and has served as either a keynote or invited speaker at over 300 events. And he's here with us today. How exciting. He's taken some time. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Alan Hamilton to the show today. So, Alan, you give me permission?
Yes.
Alan is who you are. And before we have our conversation, I want to share a quote from your book, Lead with Your Heart, Lessons from a Life with Horses, which I am so inspired by, and I told you before we started the show, I love the book. It's a beautiful book. It's a gift, really, you want to give to someone. It's an art book, really. And there's a quote in here from Hermann Hesse, and I love it. So it's from Siddhartha, one of my favorite books, and it's kind of leading us into our conversation today. So the quote goes, knowledge can be communicated, but not wisdom. One can find it, live it, do wonders with it, but one cannot communicate and teach it. And I started with that quote because this is a show talking with wise elders. You know, people may think with the credentials we just rattled off about you and as a neurosurgeon that we're going to be talking about the latest breakthroughs in health. But we're really going to be focusing on the wisdom that all of that education, all of life experience brings you to, because that's the real treasures in life. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I sort of feel like, You know, for me, I've spent a lifetime training horses. My grandfather, I grew up in a home where there was, domestic violence, and my mom left with my brother and my grandfather helped raise me, and he was a big equestrian, a former cavalry officer. And so he gave me this love of horses. So my whole life I've been around horses and training horses. And, it seems like, neurosurgery is all gleaming steel and microscopes and computers, and horses are all, warm animals and round pens and cowboys and being outside, and there's sort of a right brain, left brain symmetry to it in some ways. But I think the two sides of that experience really feed off of each other. And I've learned a lot in both spheres that really kind of apply to life.
So can I ask you how many horses you have?
It depends on the number I'm training, but I have about four of my own, and then usually up to eight that were in various phases of training.
Wow, I'm so envious. I've always wanted to be a cowgirl ever since I was a little kid. You know, girls would bring their dolls to school, and I'd bring my horses and my cowboys and everything to show and tell. And the teacher would say to me, "You don't really play with those, do you?" I would shyly have to say, "Yes, I do. I love my horses. I spend hours with my horses and cowboys."
When I was a little kid, you remember they had this show that was real small. It was called Mr. Ed, and it was about a talking horse.
Oh, sure.
And I thought that it turns out that they made Mr. Ed talk with a little piece of invisible fishing line and some peanut butter under his lip. But
oh, no.
Right. But I thought, I thought as a kid, I'd just walk around these stables, and when no one was around, that's when I'd find the horses that could talk. So I can't tell you how many years I would wait till everybody else was out of the stable, and then I'd say, okay, now we can talk. Who can talk in here? And I'd go one horse after another. And it took me a long time to realize they do talk to you, but they don't talk to you like Mr. Ed. They talk to you, heart to heart kind of thing.
Well, so when you train horses, do you train them to do things, or do you train them to be ridden? Like a horse whisperer would, be training them. What's your training?
Yeah, I do it. It's really, people call it horse whispering. I always say, horse whispering is about talking, very clearly and softly to the horse, and very loudly to the people, because usually what happens with horses is they don't really have horse problems, they have people problems. And so that's usually what you're solving. And yes, it's called horse whispering, and I've been called a horse whisperer many times, but it's really training horses first on the ground to really get used to you and have a relationship and a partnership, and then everything that you're going to do under saddle, you start on the ground, and then you go under saddle. And, the idea is to develop a really sound, light, responsive horse that's your partner, and is your partner because he wants to be your partner, not because might is right or you dominated him or anything else, but that he's doing it because he trusts you. And I think there's a real lesson there because, so often we do things because we do them out of power, because that's our predator side of our evolutionary personality. And, the horse comes at it from a very different side of partnership and of prey, of the herd. And so the horse tends to think of what's good for both of us, what's good for all of us in the herd, not what do I get out of it. So it's a very different mindset. And, people say if you want to be different, you have to see differently. And, when you're working with a horse, you're really seeing the world through the eyes of a prey animal, of a herd member. And it's a very humbling experience to see, that they live for tranquility, for peace, for harmony with the herd. They live, their leaders are always exposing themselves first to the danger and then making sure that wherever they go, they have the common good of the herd, whatever they do. They literally earn their leadership every single day. So it is kind of humbling to work with them.
Why do you think horses are so therapeutic? There's so many ways that horses are being used as therapy. What is it about the horse?
Well, I think it's pretty easy. We predators, the hallmark of a pack predators language. So whether it's wolf or orcas, but we took it to evolutionary heights of language development that nobody ever dreamt of. But at the same time, it locked us into literally listening to a voice in our head. It developed an ego and an identity, and it separated us from everything. And the horse doesn't care about any of that. The horse says, I don't speak language like you. You can tell me all the lies you want. You can tell yourself all the lies you want. That doesn't matter. The only thing I read is really what's coming out of you emotionally. What's the energy that's in your body that I can sense? And so the horse bypasses all of that. And if you think about spiritual practices in a very broad sense of what is spirituality, in the absolute broadest sense of the word, I think it's an inner drive, an inner need to connect and belong to something bigger than just yourself. And it could be religion, it can be God, it can be the cosmos, it can be nature, it can be your family, it can be your community. It really doesn't matter. But there's this innate drive in us that says, I am not complete. I know this identity, individual, autobiographical self, is not complete. And if you think about all of our spiritual practices, whether it be chanting, whether it be prayer beads, whether hymns, whatever, they're all designed to get that left hemisphere to shut up, to get that inner voice to finally quiet, because it's the right hemisphere that connects and senses communion. And so, you know, when you go out with a horse, you naturally go into a right brain registry, if you will, with that horse in order to connect. And that means the horse is saying, I'm trying to sense everything that you're feeling, everything, what your emotions are, and that's what makes them so intensely therapeutic.
Yeah, they're just such amazing animals. I, at one time in my life, for a short period of time, lived on a horse farm in the UK that was owned by a friend of mine, a woman. And so she had a beautiful big white Arabian stallion, and she had a little Welsh mountain pony. So we would go out riding together. I would be on the Welsh mountain pony, this little thing, you know, and she'd be on this glorious big, Arabian.
Beautiful Arabian, right?
Oh, my God. It was like, you know, Sancho Panza. it was really funny. Anyway, but so I would take this little Welsh mountain pony out in the field, and the kids would come. And when I'm on that horse, I mean, I'm not an expert rider, but, you know, I did just fine. He just did everything I wanted him to do. The kids get on the horse, and he was just like a different animal. So it was so interesting to see how he reflected those children.
And you can work with. I was just working with a group of therapists 3 days ago, and I said, look, I'm going to take three different therapists, and I'm going to have you walk this horse around a round pen, literally 20 feet and back. And in that 20 seconds, you could see how the horse was registering each person differently and was sensing what their emotional output was. So, you know, some people, the horse would hang back. Other people, the horse would pull up very, very close to them because there was a sense of nurturing energy that the horse liked to be near, while the other person was much more of, you know, projecting a lot of leadership. So the horse said, okay, I get it. I should follow. And, you know, it literally in 20 seconds, you can start to assess the difference between different people, because the horse is, you know, I've always estimated that the horses are about 1,000 times more sensitive to energy than we are. So they really are these great teachers that are saying, you may not remember it, but there was a time when you communicated with all the life forms around you, and all of that is still dormant. It's all there. You just kind of turned the sound down. But I can show you it's still all here. And I think that's one of their great lessons. And then I think the other thing is they always go, you know, whatever you put out, that's what's going to come back. You know, and that's an important lesson too.
Such an immediate feedback. Do you think that's true for other animals as well, dogs and cats?
Right.
And
well, you know, there's no question that, particularly domesticated animals, like the dog, really tune in. We tune into human beings. In fact, we know that the dogs evolved to the point that MRI, functional MRI and PET have shown that dogs have a unique area of their brain that responds to facial recognition in humans, not dogs. They have a separate area for dogs. So they've evolved to really read us, but I think it's different because the dog we get, because it's a fellow predator. I mean, you can say to a dog, you know, come here, boy, that's good. Oh, good boy. You know, that makes sense to us. But, you know, if you say to a horse, come on, come on, but come on, over the jump, come on, over the jump, the horse is going to look at you like, what? You know, and it's not like you can go, here's four carrots if you get over, you know, the 6 foot jump. They just, you know, but you know, they it's a completely different reward system. Their reward system is to relax. You know, they're prey animals. What they want out of life is, I'm here in this beautiful pasture with a couple of buddies of mine, and as far as the eye can see, there's not a single thing to disturb us or threaten us. So if you put a little energy on a horse as they come to a jump, the horse will say, okay, let's respond to that energy and move away up over the jump, and then when the horse gets over the jump, they go, there's the relaxation. Think about the difference between a greyhound race and a thoroughbred race. In a thoroughbred race, the horses are all in a claustrophobic, chute. It suddenly bursts open, and they're all trying to outrun each other to get to the front. And they're getting their rear ends whacked a lot, too. So, and then they finally get over the finish line, and it's all over. Whew. Okay. In a greyhound race, they have to have a mechanical rabbit. They have to have something to chase, or they won't run. And so, you know, there's sort of like the epitome of the difference. We're after something. We need something. We have to go after, you know, the next recognition, the next achievement, the next salary raise, the bigger house, whatever, stake, a dollar, you know, whatever. But, you know, the horse says, no, what I'm after is peace. So, you know, if you can make yourself peaceful and calm inside, the horse just absolutely wants to stand next to you. And because it's saying that person's calm and quiet. And, there's a couple of videos if people are interested on YouTube where I show just how breathing will quiet a horse down. And, you know, it's so hard sometimes to tell these cowboys, slow down, just quiet. Just meditate. Just get your heart and soul quiet, and that horse will quiet down immediately. I always say, you know, you want to bring a horse to a stop, breathe. Just breathe, and the horse will come to a stop.
Well, I think there are some programs with prisoners, incarcerated men, and horses, and it really helps these men to heal by taking care
of horses.
It does.
And I've done work with cancer patients, PTSD, substance abuse, domestic violence. I have a course that I run on negotiating skills with business and the law school, because you try and negotiate with a 1,200-pound partner on a deal breaker, that's the big problem. So I think there's another thing. There's several studies now that show these are animals that want to run away from a harmful energy, you know, like a predator in the grass. And so there's several studies in different venues, kids with domestic violence, prisoners, psychiatric patients, residential patients who have emotional outbursts that require restraint. And in all those cases, those individuals who work with horses get calmer and have less problems because you can't be violent around a horse. The horse will leave. The horse will leave violently if necessary to get away from it. So the point is that horse is constantly teaching you to look inside and get yourself under control. And, you know, that's the great thing about training horses is every single time you train a horse, you're back up against yourself. You're confronting yourself to solve the problems with the horse.
Well, you know, when you shared in the very beginning of your early life and having some, you know, domestic violence, and then you had the horses around you, which must have been such a powerful piece of your healing when you were a child.
Oh, yeah.
And here you are taking that early experience and your early wound and now being able to share it, that healing out there in the world?
There's it's an interesting phenomenon. I mean, we can talk about it because I think in so many ways your listeners will relate to it. Women have a much easier time with horses than men. I can just tell you that because women are much more able to connect quicker, intuit emotion quicker. It's just the way we're wired, and men are just a little stupid. But the interesting thing was I was at a very big horse show, and there was a number of male trainers, so Monty Roberts and Buck Brannum, and a whole bunch of us were there. And I kept saying, what is it about, women and horses and why, here we are, a group of men who train horses. Every single one of us had a history of domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of us had a history of violence against us. And so I think what happened was we identified very early with the notion of feeling like prey.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think about being a three-year-old kid and being smacked around by an adult man, what are your options? You're prey. You know what it's like to have violence imposed on you, and your only solution is to try and flee. So it was just this discussion about how there was sort of a hole in each one of us, and that the horse sort of helped us with that. And I thought that was just really interesting that all of us had histories of domestic violence as children.
Yes, isn't that interesting to see how those common experiences led all, all three. I mean, I know of Monty. I've seen the documentary about him.
Right.
And I know that he had terrible abuse as a child.
Oh,
and how sorry?
Yeah, terrible abuse. I mean,
he
had, I forget how many, several dozen bones broken in his body. In fact, he at one point was going to try and kill his father. And a nun who really loved him in school stepped in and said, I know what you have in mind, and you can't do that. You've got to stop.
So it's like taking the wound, which we all have. We all have our wounds. It's part of being human. We all have the traumas in our life of one sort or other, wherever they came from, and being able to take those experiences and somehow transform them to become a vehicle for our own personal healing and then the healing that we take out into the world.
I agree so wholeheartedly. I think first, we all do have wounds, but I always feel, who am I going to be listening to? The person who just sort of speaks to me authoritatively, or the person who speaks to me because they understand what it means to be hurt, and they understand the emotions that I might have, and they understand the fragility that I might feel or the vulnerability that I might feel? And you go, so who are you going to connect to? And, it's sort of automatic. The person who has been wounded is the person who understands the wounds in others, and they connect. And I that's one of the great lessons that I think horses are always trying to teach us, which is you can always connect more. You're never done connecting. You just are finding another layer and another layer and another layer. And that's what the horse is always challenging you to do, saying, can you become more mindful? Can you become more connected? Can you become more sensitive and aware? I think you're right. Wounds are the way that we grow up, and wounds are the way that we learn to forgive and to connect.
They are our grist for the mill. If we choose to take them as the path to healing, rather than be vindictive and feel we're powerless or want to commit revenge, it doesn't work that way in life. That's not really their gift for us. It's not the purpose. But we have to have a certain degree of experience and wisdom to get us to that place. So, in your book, Lead with Your Heart, what are some of the key lessons that you have learned from your experience working with horses and that you share with people in your various variations on a theme of how you teach and share out in the community?
Well, I think the first lesson, and the most important one for me at least, is wherever you go out in the world and you bump into a problem, it's you. You know, it's you have to sort of say, you know, it's me that's reacting to the problem. It's me that's feeling the problem. And so I think that's one of the things is the horse is always bringing it back to the human being. I think, you know, there's a lot. One of the most interesting, I think, is that the horse teaches you to reward abundantly. And that's something I think sometimes we withhold that or we forget in our busy lives that, and I have this saying in my barn, it's from a French cavalry officer, which says, ask for a lot, settle for less, and reward frequently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the horse, that reward is that moment of peace and quiet and a pet and you take a breath. And I think a horse just teaches you to be more mindful about rewarding. I think the other thing is the horse teaches you compromise because you're dealing with a 1,200-pound animal, and you go, every time I try and impose my will on that animal, sooner or later, if it's just based on dominance, I'm going to lose. You know, I mean, if I'm going to make a physical contest out of it, there's no way ultimately that horse can't win. So the horse says, find another way, and the way is to connect with the horse's mind and to make the partnership, the connection. So I think that's a huge lesson. And then I think the horse also teaches you your agendas creep in so often. You know, you'll go out in the round pen and you'll say something like, well, I got 20 minutes to do this, so let me get this done. So instantaneously the horse says, you've lost integrity with me because you're more worried about how much time we have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the horse is constantly teaching you, don't let the agenda interfere with the relationship. It doesn't matter if the horse learns to back up today. It doesn't matter if it's 2 weeks from now. It's much more important that every single step of the way I've taught that horse, I'm your partner. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to use violence. You know, Monty Roberts has a wonderful expression, which is violence is never for the victim and always for the benefit of the perpetrator. And horses have suffered for, you know, centuries at the hand of humanity. You know, there's that saying, the road of civilization is paved with the bones of horses. And, you know, finally now in the 20th century, in the 21st century, we're finally getting the message that we don't have to use violence. So everything that we taught for thousands of years about how to break horses, as we say, was wrong. And, you know, that's another lesson we have to learn in the world, in a global world. You know, we've been having this eat what you kill mentality and chew up all the resources and take what you want and, you know, the hell with the third world and the hell with other, you know, and finally you get to the point where you realize, hey, wait a minute, this is all the same herd, you know. And I think that's one of the things that horses drive home with a vengeance, which is horses think as a group. They don't see themselves as a mere individual. They see themselves as the members of a group, and they take responsibility for each other.
Yeah, so many great analogies. What happens when you take a horse out of the herd and just have like one horse? Like some people just own one horse.
Right.
So it's just you and that one horse, not a herd anymore. What happens to that horse?
Well, it is. First off, there's nothing more desperate, more sad than a horse that is truly alone because they are so hardwired to be in a group. But here's what happens with the single horse. You know, you go out to the paddock and you see that single horse there. Now, if the horse could talk to you, which he can in a way, what he would say is, look, I know you think I'm alone. I'm not. I've got another herd member. He's the ugliest horse you've ever seen. He's got two legs instead of four. He's got his eyes in the front. But that's my herd, okay? It's me and that ugly horse, you know. And I mean, they know, of course, we're human beings and we're predators, but the point is they've bonded to us. And, you know, they'll nicker in the morning when you show up and they recognize you and they are waiting for you. And, you know, it's important to remember that when they are waiting for their herd to be reunited. That's really all they're doing when they're standing alone there, is waiting for that herd to be reunited. And it's kind of amazing, you know, to be with an animal that is so much of a group mentality. So, yeah, they're the truly isolated horse is filled with panic, because from a prey animal point of view, there is no protection. There is no one to help protect me. There's no one to run with. There's no one to help sense the environment. And, you know, it's like being really, truly lost on your own. So horses, by and large, they'll bond to that. They'll bond with the human being very closely because that's their herd. Herd of two.
Right, so there is that bonding and that
it's profound.
Special relationship that happens.
It's very profound.
Which has to be, I would imagine, continually renewed. I mean, if you go away for a while, you know, then that horse feels alone again, right? So.
Right, and but again, it depends on the circumstance. Are there other horses in the stable? You know, are there other horses, you know, boarded nearby? All those things, but the horses have terrific memories. You know, like we sort of joke about, you know, an elephant has such a great memory, but it turns out prey animals can't afford to make mistakes twice. You know, if you're a predator and you miss a couple of times, that's okay. You can try again. But if you're a prey animal and you mess up, you're going to end up as somebody's lunch. You know, the zebra that hesitated for a moment isn't around. That isn't the ancestor. The ones that ran are the ones that have managed to, you know, get their genes into the next generation. So horses have a fabulous memory because they've got to go, hey, the last time I saw grass bent like this, Uncle George bought it. So I got to look out, there's a predator somewhere, or I got sick eating this kind of grass. So they have to remember it. And they did an experiment actually here at the University of Arizona, where they taught horses to identify different patterns. And some of the patterns they'd get a pellet and other patterns they wouldn't. And they came back a year later, and the horses still retained 90% accuracy on the patterns, and human beings were 50-50. They couldn't tell the difference anymore. Wow. So they have terrific memories. So you can come back and see a horse that I've had horses where, you know, I've trained them, and 5 years later, I see them again at a clinic or a horse show, and they absolutely remember you.
Oh, that must be so rewarding to be reunited.
It is.
Like an old friend, right?
It is an old, wise friend who, you know, just says, welcome back, you know.
Over the weekend, I heard a journalist talk about a book that she wrote after visiting prisons around the world. And she visited these prisons in Norway, where they took these prisoners and they gave them freedom. They had them in a beautiful environment. They fed them good food. They had classes. They could learn things. In some cases, they could go home on the weekends unaccompanied, no ankle tracking system. And they had like a 1% recidivism rate. So their model of working with people is respect and supporting them to grow and to heal, rather than the model that we operate in our prison systems, which is very much you torture the prisoners. Like they're terrible people, and they're going to be punished forever, and you give them the worst of everything, and you expect to have a different outcome when they leave. To me, what you're talking about with horses and what they're teaching us is teaching us to understand that if we want the best from anyone, we have to change how we perceive them, relate to them, acknowledge them, validate them, work with them.
You know, I just was listening to PBS, and they were talking about a program where prisoners can go to college and qualify for grants and scholarships and go to college, and the recidivism rate on those who graduate is extremely low. But now a number of legislatures have said, I'll be damned if I'm going to give a prisoner a college education. And you go, well, wait a minute. I thought that was the point, was to get them out of the criminal vicious cycle they're in. But people sort of feel like, no, you know, the prisoners should do nothing but but suffer. And the truth of the matter is prisons create a lot of criminals, and they perpetuate it. And, you know, you sort of get what you incentivize. And in a prison system, a lot of these prisoners have to be violent. They have to be aggressive if they want to stay alive. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think in some ways, what we're doing with prisons and is so immoral, because it becomes very clear that the goal is not to rehabilitate. The goal is to incarcerate and isolate. And you know, in so many ways, these mandatory sentencing reforms, which everybody jumps on the bandwagon, in a way, it doesn't even allow a judge to have some discretion about whether or not this person might deserve a less harsh treatment or a more harsh treatment, depending on this, on the circumstances. So I think prison is a very good example of an area where we lack a lot of empathy often. To me, it's probably the most terrifying thing you could do to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a lot depends on the support systems, and we don't put a lot of support systems in place for parolees. We don't put a lot of systems in place for people on probation, for first offenders, for juveniles. I've seen juveniles just thrown in jail at age 14, and they throw the key away. And, you know, when I take mm-hmm. them out and work with horses with them, and for the first time in their lives, they get out of that relationship with a horse what they put into it. And I say to them, look, you can trust that horse. That horse will never deceive you. That horse is never going to walk up and say, I'm going to pretend to be your friend until I can get you close and then knock your block off. That's not. What you put in that horse and what you see is what you're going to get. And sometimes that's the first trusting relationship they've ever had in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Wow, how profound. So many people are never really going to have much of an opportunity to build a relationship with a horse. So what are some of your words of wisdom to offer people from your experiences and all the work you've done with horses and training, and also training the humans who work with the horses? What are some of the pearls that you can share with people to help them gain more wisdom and healing and peace in their lives?
Well, you know, that was sort of what Lead With Your Heart was meant to do, is sort of bridge that step and sort of say, this is a lesson you can learn with horses, but then this is the lesson that you go on and apply in life. So, you know, one of them is you have to earn leadership. You can't take it, because real leadership is something that's granted by the individuals who decide to bond to you and to follow with you. Another one is learning real patience. I mean, I wish I had learned these lessons when I was a lot younger as a parent, because, you know, what the horse teaches you to do is to clear your mind and not have an agenda. And I always think about when my kids would be talking to me as teenagers, half the time I was waiting for them to take a breath so I could tell them what they should do, instead of really relaxing and just letting myself truly, actively listen to them. Mm-hmm. Another lesson is with a horse, it's physical, but with the horse, it's if you create resistance, a line of resistance by pulling on that lead rope, that horse is going to resist back, and then you're going to escalate, then the horse will escalate, and then you've gotten nowhere. And that's those lines of resistance are constantly presenting themselves in our lives, and we have to learn not to escalate. Instead, what you do with the horse is you teach that horse to flow with you in a curve. And so I sort of call that a curve of compromise. But the point is the horse says, don't create resistance. Look for compromises. And, you know, when I go into work now, I go, am I creating a line of resistance? Am I pulling on somebody's lead rope, or am I truly helping them to kind of come over to my side, or me come over to theirs? But we have to compromise and work as a team. So every one of the lessons, I think there's about 112 in the book, but every one of them is meant to sort of give us some insight into the issues and values in our lives. And yes, it starts with a horse, but it always ends up in a lesson that you can use in life. Because that's really what horses have done for me.
And wouldn't it be great, Alan, if we could take the Russian leaders, the American military leaders, and put them in a course with you and horses? So we don't get into the escalation behavior.
Well, I think that's the big lesson. I think the bigger lesson that the horse is saying is, look, you've been wildly successful as predators, okay? You're the uber predator of the planet, but you're wiping it out. You're wiping out the wildlife, you're wiping out the plants, you're wiping out the sea life, you're ruining the planet, you're chewing up resources recklessly, you're going to war over resources, you know. And at some point the horse says, you know, there's another strategy, which is, where is the commonality, where's the compromise, where's the sense of the herd? And, you know, I was thinking about, it's funny, you know, because it just shows you the connection. That recent picture of that boy who was pulled out of a bombing attack in Syria, mm-hmm. you know, that, and, you know, mm-hmm. and I was looking at that picture and I just said, how could anyone want to deny that child the chance for a better life? How could anyone look at that child and not say, you deserve to be brought to some place that's safe, that's an asylum. We will give you a new life in America, where you can be fulfilled. And you know, I just look at that and I go, that's really what the horse is saying, is you're not going to succeed for too much longer. You know, you look at North Korea talking about a might is right, bully, you know, eat what you kill, predatory approach. And you go, well, where's that going to get us? You know, we're going to have to find some way to curb that and say, no, the common good wins out. The common good, if the nations of the world are arrayed against you in every, as a herd, you have no choice. You know, it's sort of like the horse, which goes, you know, you cannot outmuscle us. You've got to do it through partnership. And I think there's a much bigger lesson, which is, in the 21st century, we're going to have to learn the lessons of the herd if we want to thrive.
You know, that's why the real message that goes throughout your book is learning to be more mindful, to find more inner peace, to work with compassion with others. Because right now it feels like our herd, our human herd, is in a total panic frenzy. You know, mm-hmm. it feels like the herd is terrified all the time. I mean, just listening to the news, I tell people, please do not leave that news on all day long. It will just raise your cortisol levels and compromise your health, because it's all
absolutely
fear.
I can't tell you, you know, when I see a patient immediately post-op day one or something, and I walk in and they've got CNN on, I go, just turn that off. Why would you want to expose yourself to all of that negative energy? You know, if you want to watch TV, put on a comedy, put on something that makes you laugh, put on something that's heartwarming, but for God's sake, don't bombard yourself with all of that negativity. And as you say, it elevates your cortisol, it depresses your immune system, it's depressing from a mood point of view, it creates anxiety. You know, there's nothing about the news that's meant to really make you happy. I mean, if you right. think about it, just go watch the news tonight, and, well, you know, tonight will be the debate. That'll make everybody more unhappy. But, you know, the point is, you know, look at the news story sometimes and then catalog it and then say, at the end of a half an hour, was there one story that made me feel better? And the answer is no. You know, Andy Weil, who's one of my close friends and the guru of integrative medicine, he calls it, you know, take a vacation from television and newspapers. Just don't look at them for a week. And, you know, just gain your sanity back, because I agree with you. When you look at these stories, there is a sense of real panic. There is a sense of real trouble. And there's this notion that we've depleted our options. You know, that it's it's, you know, riots in the street and killing our neighbor when they're unarmed, and you know, it's all of these things. And at every turn, you know, the horse is saying, "Where's your devotion to the herd? Where is your devotion to your fellow man?"
Well, and that's such an important question to bring us back to what's real, and not get lost in the environment that's created out of the news and out of the newspapers and just the so much of the rhetoric that stimulates fear and anger, and then, you know, the need to feel like we have to protect ourselves and attack others.
And then, you know, always it's others. You know, it's always, you know, whenever you want to create an enemy, you make them different from yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so that you think back on all the wars and all the names we give to our enemies. You know, it's when we realize they're the same as us that we belong in the herd. That's when, you know, when I'm a white guy, but I can't imagine how horrible it is to be a black man and to have to worry at every turn if somebody stops you or pulls you over. You know, and I feel for the police too. I understand that they put their lives at risk every single day for us. But the point is, we're following lines of resistance, not curves of compromise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not saying, how do I identify with that black man who is terrified of me, and is persecuted? And you know, if you look at the numbers, you just look at this, you know, inequity. And, you know, at every step of the way, you are being asked to, am I going to be a predator or am I going to be part of the herd? And that's really, to me, where the horse is constantly trying to teach us that there is a different way, there's a different path than the predatory one.
Because being a predator disconnects us from ourselves, and being part
Absolutely.
Of the herd reunites us with who we really are, that place of peace and power and love and compassion and joy and fulfillment. So you have a choice, being the predator, being part, recognizing your place as part of the herd, which is the connection.
I agree. And I think, you know, your brain is literally embodying the argument, because in the left hemisphere with language, you know, you're inside your head. You know, you've got that voice inside your head that is your ego, is yourself. And then on the right side, you've got that brain that's reaching out and saying, no, I want to be part of the herd. I want to be part of all the life around me. I want to belong. I want to reach out and connect. And so, it's literally embodied in the very structure of our brains, is that dichotomy.
So can you give us, before we come to the end of the show, can you draw from your memory just one experience or one person, one of your classes where a transformation happened by being with a horse?
Yeah, I can come up with thousands of my own, but one of the most moving for me that I remember was a young woman in her early 30s, a mom, and she had a malignant brain tumor, and that's what I take, you know, that's what I specialize in, is brain tumors. And so she had been in one of our cancer clinics, and she had had a recurrence, and she had to go through a whole round of very, very toxic chemotherapy. And she came out to the ranch and, you know, asked to work with us, one of our stallions. And that's always a little troublesome, because the stallions are so powerful and so dominant. And I said to her, why do you want to go out with the stallion? And she says, I have to get back in the mindset that I can make peace with something powerful and almost violent, and that I can make a partnership that then improves it for me. And so I watched her in this round pen just watching the stallion going round and round, and then slowly she calmed herself down, and then the stallion just slowed down and then walked right over and stood beside her as calm and as quiet as could be. And she said, I needed to know that I could do that before mm-hmm. I went through this chemotherapy, because to her, that's what cancer was. It was this big, powerful force that was out of control, and she had to kind of control herself and calm herself so that she could gain control and go through a healing process where she sort of felt like the partnership could work.
Wow.
So, yeah. Wow. So that was one of the most moving that I've ever seen. I mean, to see this huge stallion just full of force and speed, and then all of a sudden, you know, she just quieted herself down, and suddenly it was under her control from a peaceful point of view, from a, you know, partnership point of view, and that's really what she wanted out of the chemo and the doctors who were taking care of her.
Did you ever follow up with her? What her
mm-hmm. In fact, I followed up with her. She survived for another 3.5 years and went through a second round of chemotherapy. And the really moving part for me was when she passed away, she asked to have her ashes placed at the center of the round pen.
Oh, wow.
And so to me, you know, the round pen is like the sacred hoop. It's a sacred circle of life. But she really made me feel like, you know, I was working on hallowed ground.
Wow. And you were, and you are, and you do. Well, this has been such an inspiring conversation. I just really appreciate your wisdom and all the wonderful work you do in with your patients and your surgeries, with your animals, with people. I hope we've inspired people to pick up a copy of this beautiful book, Lead With Your Heart, Lessons from a Life with Horses. Alan's website is Alan with two L's, Hamilton.com, because he has other books that you may be interested in as well, filled with all his wisdom. And certainly go visit him on his website with his blog. Anything else you want to just add?
No. Alan, I just want to thank you for your leadership and your passion and your advocacy and how vitally important that is for people to understand that they have to take control of their own fate, their own health, their own well-being. There's, you know, nobody's going to do it for you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been such an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show today. So
it's entirely mutual.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining us for another wonderful show. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.